Hey, and welcome to Product Journeys. I'm Fran Gleisner.
And I'm Lachlan Robertson. We're both product managers stumbling our way through our product journeys. We're out to meet amazing product people and learn a bit about their skills and experiences.
And today we've got an awesome conversation with Chloe Leon. Chloe is an empathetic product leader with a passion for creating elegant solutions that solve real-world problems. Her background is in technology consulting, which led her to the world of product management. Chloe prides herself in continuous learning and building structures that lead to high-performing, empowered product teams. Chloe, welcome. It's very nice to have you. And we start off with product journeys. Tell us about your product journey.
Well, thank you for having me. I think like a lot of people who've found themselves in product at this point in time anyway, it's been an unconventional journey here. So I think a lot of people either come from engineering or design or project management. But I actually started off just as a secretary and an L&D administrator back in the day, about 10 years ago now. And I was working at a company that were transforming their learning and development into a more technology focused. So they were actually bringing in a learning management system as their piece of technology to try and handle that at a group of hospitals. And I was like, this technology thing is really awesome. We could do so much more with just the few people that we have. So I really dove into that learning management system and found, oh, I really enjoy this. So I actually asked the company who was our vendor at the time if I could work for them and learn more about it. So I went from implementing one learning management system into implementing many throughout the NHS. I was a technology consultant at that point, so it was a really interesting way of really learning what the wants, needs, and desires were of the customers at that time. And I got to work with engineers to change the product as well, because it was an open source product, meaning we could add things on, adjust how it worked to suit the needs of those clients at the time. And then at some point, that wasn't enough as well. So I ended up going to a bunch of conferences where this vendor, it's called Tertra Learning at the time, was out selling the product in lots of different conferences in America. And then I just asked the CEO if I could have a job there as well. And I ended up on the product team. So I think I came from more of a subject matter expertise lens on this particular product. I really knew this product in depth. So I ended up moving to New Zealand headquartered and managed to then, actually affect the product from its core, which was really awesome after doing that for 3 or 4 years outside of the core. So now I got to bring those ideas and all of my customer knowledge at that time to really change stuff in the products right there.
Was learning and development a particular passion for you, or was it just the area itself in technology? Oh, this is exciting.
Yeah, I think learning and development was really a passion for me, because as a teenager, I wasn't able to go on to higher education because I had to take care of my mum at the time as well. So I really found that adult education was a passion, and that self-guided learning was really important. And I felt that if we could use technology in order to get, learning more democratized across organizations, then the people who had the capability, who may not have had the circumstances, may be able to then grow within organizations, which I thought was really cool and important. Although we ended up focusing a lot on compliance because the National Health Service was one of the main clients. I think really then getting that product passion came from then doing, right? So you realize, I have these products. What am I supposed to do with these? I know that I can make them better with feature X or feature Y, but really, how do you do that in the most efficient way? And then prioritization and all of that good stuff. So then there was a lot of meetups and Medium articles, which helped me along the way really start to hone the actual craft and realize this was a real job that you can really get your teeth into.
So as part of learning the product craft, you were relying on external sources to help guide you or teach you through that, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Medium was one of the best sources at the time. 5 years ago or so is when product practice was really going hard in that space. And I learned a lot through how to build strategic roadmaps and then put it in practice at the job, see if it worked, and then realize, oh, that did work. And now I'm going to try another thing and another thing. So sort of the foundational building blocks as you go through a need for a tool, if that makes sense.
Pascal, I was just going to ask, there are so many articles, how did you pick and choose them? But it sounds like it's based on something that you needed at that time to apply.
Absolutely.
Were there any particular authors or articles that you remember reading going light bulb or...
I think a lot of the practices from Spotify and Netflix at the time were some of the prime ones there. And then you have the old Steve Jobs, everything he said at the time that came through was just gold. Of course, that's why Apple is so successful. It's all about the customer and how they use the products, and having that vision was really, really important. Knowing where you're going, I think, is one of the key things, is you have to know what you want to achieve at the end and what behavior you want to affect and what change you want to affect. And I think all of the advice around know your customers, speak to your customers, live and breathe it was really important, because without that, you don't really have anything, in my opinion.
It's interesting you mentioned the know where you're going thing, because I think one of the interesting parts of the product game is, especially when you ask or interact with your customers a lot, what do you want to see from this product? You might just get the classic, oh, I want a faster horse type of answer. Like, mm-hmm. How have you found that helping forming an idea of where you're going without totally just relying on your customers to tell you what you should be making?
Yeah. I think it's important to use your product to understand what is the core jobs to be done. Is such a popular thing to say, but what is the core thing people are trying to do here? Are they trying to save time? Are they trying to get better at something? They may say, I want a faster horse, but they actually want to get somewhere in less than 10 minutes, right? So then bringing it back to that, and then ignoring things outside the sphere of everyone's going to get hundreds of feature requests all the time, but it's about pulling them together and finding out what are the core themes here and then really zeroing in on that. And I think that when you talk to customers and you have a vision of where you're going, they love that. They're totally on board with it and then can give you additional information that you would have never gleaned unless you had a vision, if that makes sense.
That is great. I think, being able to talk to customers and work through those ideas is awesome. I'm really interested in your being a subject matter expert in one of the products that you've worked in versus not. How do you find that? Or what are the challenges and opportunities you've found in both of those spaces?
Yeah, I think it's really important to become a subject matter expert in whatever product you're working on. And so I think I may have just had a head start in the first product that I worked on and just knew that one really well. But my method to my madness is really, once you're given a specific problem or you're given ownership of a particular product that might already exist, it's about going and consuming as much information as possible, playing with the tool, figuring out where all the quirks are, everything, and really just start to live and breathe what that product is and put yourself in the shoes of that customer before then going out and trying to make decisions about stuff that you don't really know about just yet. The customer empathy part of our jobs is what I put at the very top. The customer is king, and empathy for what their needs are and wants and desires is more important than anything else, because all of the other skills can really be learned, but without having that lived experience in something, you're sort of making decisions, I think, based on just cold pieces of data, maybe, rather than really trying to make something better or help somebody who's very specific.
Yeah, I find that so fascinating. I think I flop between being a subject matter expert and not at all, because I think for me, sometimes knowing something so well, I already think I have all the answers and then maybe don't listen so much. And so,
I was going to bring up that same point.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? maybe the next product I work on, I'll attack totally differently as well. I think also being able to lean on subject matter experts that you know, and being able to have, we used to call it the oracle. Who is the oracle that you can ask, how does this product actually work now? And what are all the quirks? You're not going to be able to necessarily learn everything depending on how complex it is as well.
But from the learning and development job, you then moved on to somewhere else.
So now I'm at Xero. I initially came in as a development team lead because I hadn't had a huge amount of experience leading groups of engineers or groups of people. And I really wanted to have that because I thought, just based on everything that, say, Marty Kagan says about the developer is really king, they're the ones who can actually affect change and can come up with some of the best ideas for your product. I wanted to have some of that leadership skill. But after 6 months, I found a product role at Xero. So I jumped straight back into it, which was really, really fun. And I actually couldn't wait to get my hands dirty again, if that makes sense. I just really wanted to be able to affect change and help people, I think, outside of the organization. Yeah, I think it's my thing. It's just wanting to really make an impact and help somebody, a real person somewhere, do something faster or better. Or
it's very cool. It's cool to be able to really put your finger on it as well. I think a lot of people struggle with what exactly they want to do or be, or, and that's so interesting, dev team lead. My understanding is it's quite a technical role, but do you have to be technical to manage?
Yeah, I think that you have to have empathy for what their jobs are, and you have to really understand how complicated their world really is. That's my take on that. And also free them up to do their best work, right? There's so much sometimes, especially I think in large organizations, bureaucracy around things and how do pieces of tech fit together. But if you can try and clear the runway and you help them with, say, I took mostly a scrum type role in those teams that I worked with. So I led two different teams. And the first things that I always did was set up all of their practices, make all of their routines really, really predictable. Don't waste their time. And I think I got a lot of respect back for that in those teams. So it was more around being a really good delivery lead in that space. And I think that's what served me pretty well, and them, hopefully.
And building up those patterns or that predictability obviously helps to an extent with delivery of product. But then, as you probably worked out, the drawback into product part was the actual making sure we're doing the right things. And you talked about affecting change. So that was something you didn't quite see in those teams, or just felt you could be more impactful as a product person?
Yeah, I think that realistically, I wanted to be part of figuring out what was the biggest problem to solve at the time. And I don't think in that particular role, you have that as part of your responsibility, right? You're told by the product person and maybe through their discovery practices, this is the most important thing. But that's probably some of the most fun part of the job, really, to just find out what are all these problems. Let's go build a vision and go after that problem as a team. And I felt that that's part of the job that I really wanted back. So it's all well and good making it a well-oiled machine and knowing exactly what our predictable velocity is. But yeah, I felt like some of the human elements of the job were not there in that particular role.
I love it. Yeah, I find it so fascinating how different personalities are game changing, really, in a team like that. They can either motivate or demotivate. How have you brought that together in your teams?
I think being able to provide people who are all individuals with the ability to input into what is their team norms, not being a dictator, is really, really important, right? So at that point, it's like, what individual parts of this team make it a whole? And if you respect everybody as a human being, as an individual, and then bring everybody into the fold, then you move in the right direction and everybody feels motivated and happy to continue on this road and they're all bought in. And then you have a high performing team in that respect.
That's awesome.
Some of the joy of this job is about working through these creative processes with very creative people. And yeah, with things like ChatGPT on the horizon and AI, a lot of people are concerned, are these tools going to steal my job? Just like the Industrial Revolution threw, and then all of a sudden you had these robots, they could do everything. But realistically, in complex problem solving, where you're creating something for a human being at the other end who is your customer, you're still going to need all of these people and all of their quirks to be able to make something that's truly amazing. I don't think we're at the stage just yet where AI is going to be doing these things. And yeah, I don't think that there's a start, a finish, and a formula in between just yet that then equals successful product at the end of it, even if it can write code. Maybe it can write some boring requirements for us, but I don't think it's going to solve the human problems right away.
Yeah, if it was that easy, someone would have already done that thing, right? Or it would have become a standard. So when it's not the case, yeah, you are right. Maybe there are other things that people like humans can bring value to. I want to just follow on that thread of success. What's been some of the greatest accomplishments that you've had in your product career so far?
I think, you know what? A few days ago, somebody in a team that we've been helping improve the efficiency of their team, they told us, you have changed our lives.
Wow.
Just leave that silence there for a moment.
Pretty big praise, right?
Right. And I think for me, just like I was talking about a little bit earlier, being able to help people and solve real world problems for real world people is the bread and butter of what I want to do. Whether that's product management or whether that's another job title that comes later on in this, I think that I've just found a role where I get to help people right now, and that has to be the best accomplishment. And I think that any product or anything that we put out there that somebody, a real person, tells you, you have helped me, to me is chef's kiss. That's the best you could possibly do. If you can just help one person, at least you've accomplished a lot.
And you've piqued my interest. How did you help them? What was this thing that was so life-changing for them?
What we have done is taken a process just of onboarding, which took on average 11 days to do it. And we've taken that process and it's now 5 minutes. And I think the other part of this was about how we did this. So I think it's really important to remember that some products that we work in have external customers, but you also have internal customers. We worked in lockstep with them. We had conversations with them once every couple of weeks. We had open forums with them and really asked them, what is the problems you're trying to solve? And what are your wants? What are your needs? And we worked collaboratively together through the change so that it wasn't a dictatorship of the business is giving you a new process and you have to deal with it. It was, we built this process together.
Right. So this is something internal that you basically build to help the organization mm-hmm. itself then
yep.
sell more products or things to our external customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a two-pronged approach because you've got a user experience, which is being experienced by the people external. And then you have an internal business process, which we change. So you have to bear in mind both of those things at the same time. And you can't make one worse by making one better, et cetera. So you have to figure out what is the healthy balance between these two types of customers. And then the one product has to solve both problems on the back end and in the front end is sort of how I would explain it. Yeah. Not very, an easy typo.
Not at all. And I think that's also a challenge because product is, I think, seen more often as that external product with people outside of your organization using it. But it actually, I don't think there's enough focus on those internal products. And I'm not sure how to phrase this. So your goal ultimately is to change people's lives. How does that play into the way that you do your work? And is it you do all the product practices and and that's something that may or may not come in the end? Or is it something that you really strive and drive towards?
Yeah, for me, and I don't know if this is blasphemy on this podcast, but I take practices, and practices are over here. Practices are something that if you don't know how to achieve a goal that you're looking to achieve, you can go in and you can see how have other experienced people managed to get to this particular goal or have this particular output that then can be used in order to help people. But a lot of the time, I just like to use a human approach and just really like to have deep conversations with the people that you're trying to help and really build relationships. So I think when Teresa Torres talks about the continuous discovery habits of talk to your customers every week, I think that she is right in saying if you do not, then you're at a loss, really, because if you're thinking about, oh man, we have to cut scope because we need to meet this go-to-market window right here. How do I know which thing to cut? You will know. You will innately know if you know what is important to your customers, and you have to talk to them and build real relationships, because then you will feel also accountable to these real people, right? And then if you don't know how to facilitate a particular session, go ahead, go look into that, pull out a practice, maybe a facilitation canvas, and lean on what other people have done in order to help you bridge those gaps. But I wouldn't say solely relying on all of these frameworks is going to get you the same kind of success as being an empathetic human being. Yeah.
To like build on Fran's question, I totally agree that honest relationship with the people that you're trying to make a difference to is really important. But when you're looking at the potential opportunities that you have, do you look at those massive move the needle type of ones, or are you just looking for those smaller incremental type of gain things?
If I were to use one tool or framework, it probably would be the Opportunity Solution Tree by Teresa Torres, because it is such a simple way of being able to just mind map exactly what does the business need from me in order for me to be doing my job for the business, and then start to break all of your opportunities or problems down into big and then much smaller opportunities. What's worked for me is to really just put everything down on paper with the team as well. So the designers, the engineers, maybe a business partner or product marketing that you need, and everybody gets their ideas on there, and then form a really clear tree of things that you could do, and then break them down to as small as you could possibly go as far as experimentation or development of particular features could go. And then what you're trying to do is think about what already exists and how can one of these small things make a difference to that. But you could potentially have a huge initiative, but you don't necessarily need to wait to put everything out all at once, right? So I think it's really difficult to explain because it's problem solving at its finest, right? It's trying to figure out, okay, I've got the edges of the puzzle pieces all in place, and now what is the one piece that I can put in as I go? So I think it's a mixture between one big thing that you might need to do first in order to lay all the foundations for something, and then what are the smallest possible things you could do and measure as you go?
Yeah, I think you kind of need that big piece or that big picture, but actually it takes, well, at least from my experience, lots of little iterations to get it there and the puzzle pieces. Yeah. And then along your journey, what is one of the biggest learnings or failures or things that you've taken with you?
One of the first big things that I had to work on was building a mobile app for that L&D technology before. I was relying on other people in order to dictate what should be in scope, what should be out of scope. And what I had realized is that a set scope and timeline had been set for me, and that really wasn't product. I think that the biggest lesson I learned is to not be in a situation like that ever again, in which when given something by somebody who may seem really knowledgeable and knows what they're talking about, is still to just drill down to the why. And we can be the most annoying people when we ask those questions, but why is this important? Who's going to use it? What problem is this solving? I didn't necessarily have confidence at the time that I knew what I was talking about. And I think I've learned to really trust myself and that we will get much better results if we understand the why behind everything and just be really, really dogged about it. Just why? Why? Because you cannot possibly motivate your team either unless you know why you're doing something.
You're totally right with the understanding why and being able to actually, in a way, tell the deeper story about what the point of a particular thing is being very important. And especially when you work with engineers, in my experience, they kind of see through the BS, and not just in that moment, but it's also the flow and effect of that as well.
The
it's like, you know, you need to build that credibility, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, why do they need you if you don't know why you're doing what you're doing?
One of the other questions for you and your role at the moment, and maybe trying to explain it to someone casually at a barbecue or maybe a meetup, what do you do as a product manager? What is the product management role for you?
Yeah, I think I've seen plenty of those memes where the product manager tries to explain what they do and they're like, oh, like a project manager. No, please don't do that to me. This is how I explain it. We bring together all of the disciplines that can bring a technological advancement or solve a problem using technology together to ensure that we're adding value as efficiently as possible for a given customer or market, whilst ensuring this will give business value as well.
Nice. Precise. Yeah. It's really hard. I think it's still, I still don't know if I could articulate the answer to that question, which is kind of worrying thinking about, I don't know, interviews or just any kind of conversation you go to.
Yeah. I mean, you may get a different response to me on a different day, but essentially I think that, I don't know if I'm putting my foot in it by saying we're jack of all trades, but I think if we are able to successfully lead people without authority, we're able to stay organized and on top of the many moving parts of anything that we're doing, and we're able to effectively communicate what value that we're adding both internally and externally. Those are some of the linchpins to making sure that your team does continue to succeed, whether or not some experiments fail or succeed, because everything is going to fail at some point, right? But being able to build a team environment where there's a lot of trust and that a clear vision is in place, then all of the other stuff will fall into place. And I think just being really, really curious is really important as well about all of the disciplines around you and being able to steer the ship in the right direction in order to make sure that business value is also added, because we're all here in a capitalist society at the end of the day.
Yeah, very true. The thing that landed with me from that was the different hats that people within the team wear, and almost the argument for product managers is perhaps the inverse. If we didn't exist, engineers would have to be thinking about all of that stuff as well, right? That's not necessarily their best skill set or the bit that they can add the most value through. So to have us representing that business and customer value part is such a valuable skill. And it's not something that everyone has, right? Or can do naturally.
Exactly. A front-end developer said to me a few weeks ago, he was just like, you have always had a vision for our team. And I really, really appreciate that. I know exactly where we're going, so that when I'm just creating a card or a tile over here, I know that you've got in mind that we can reuse this for something else later. So I'm going to build this into the best quality I can in order to be able to reuse this and be faster later.
Yeah, that's such a nice piece of feedback as well, I think. So going back to all the different hats and jack of all trades, are there any particular skills, especially as a newbie product person, or for you in particular, that you've been, yeah, this is something that I've leaned into and I'm glad I did?
Yeah. One of the hardest things for me to get my head around was how to properly think about instrumenting products in order to be able to really understand whether it's having the desired effect you want, because it's not as easy as it sounds whatsoever. But what you're going to have to do is lay the train tracks down as you go and figure out what is it that I'm trying to measure, and making sure that you do it right is even harder. But what I do know now is getting those skills and understanding is really important. And for me, that's something that I want to continue working on, it because you can have empathy with the 10 people you talk to, but then how do you scale that if you have millions of users, you know?
100%. Oh, I love that.
Nice. One of our last guests, Liam O'Neill from Totara, had a pay it forward question asking about whether you understand your profit margins for your current product. Can I ask on the line of instrumenting and thinking about metrics, how do you think about that?
So I haven't necessarily gone through and thought about this a lot. It's interesting because it's something that's coming up more. I think when you're thinking about new technologies that you're going to sell and thinking about, okay, am I actually making a profit on this? But the situation I'm currently in is that my product is not there to necessarily make a profit. We're there to really think about efficiency. So our key metrics are rather cost to serve and CAC efficiency. So that's really the lens that I'm looking at the moment. So cost of acquisition per customer. So when you're thinking about how much money does it take to build and maintain this product, and am I making more of a margin on the savings now? So therefore, I'm saving the business money.
Right.
Is what.
That's obviously something that you, when you're chatting with your business partner that you were talking about before, those types of things are the things that will come up in that conversation, right?
I think it comes into two different key areas. So if you're looking at net profit value, you're looking at how effective is my product. And then for me, when you're looking at CAC or cost to serve, you're thinking about how efficient is my product. I think that a lot of people say in order to be a product, you need to make money. But I think that's not necessarily true. I think in order to be an effective product, you also could save a huge amount of money.
I like that. Thank you. We will jump into our rapid fire questions. Have you got a book or an article that you'd like to recommend?
Yes. Well, I think I might go for two. So if we're looking at the product lens, it has to be Continuous Discovery Habits by Teresa Torres. It's probably something that many product people say, but she just brings it back down to earth. Do this, then that, and gives you some really awesome examples as well of how companies have done it. And the second one would have to be, I just read The Gifts of Imperfections by Brené Brown. And I think as a lowly product manager, sometimes we can't please everyone all of the time. And she just brings it back to who you are as a person and that it's okay to be imperfect. You'll live to fight another day.
Yeah, it's an important reminder. Yeah. Podcasts, do you have any you'd recommend?
So the first one would be Freakonomics Radio by Stephen J. Dubner. I love that stuff. It is so interesting to think about all the different economical problems that there are out there and think about how much of our job is not done yet. And I have to plug Brené Brown again for Dare to Lead podcast. She's the goddess. I love her.
Love it. Thank you. What are you most grateful for, Chloe?
Right now, my team that I'm currently working with, I've had a hard week or so, came down with COVID last week and they sent me a beautiful gift set and said some really lovely words, which just make me feel like I've already achieved what I set out to within that space. So it's really, really nice to know those nice people around me.
That's great. I guess, is there anything else you'd like to share? Any other takeaways or calls to action?
I think it's probably just a repeat on some of the stuff that I was saying, but maybe I'll just do it as in one succinct sentence. If you really care about real world problems and helping real people, then I think all you need is just the commitment to be able to follow through on those. And don't worry about all the tools and all the other things that you could be using to get it right, but really just draw upon those people or those experiences when you need them. And just really, all you need is a lifelong learning attitude, and all of those things will come with experience and time.
There you go. Thank you, Chloe. This has been a great episode. It was awesome to chat.
Thank you.
Oh, no. Thank you for having me on.